Father, we love you. We are grateful that we can come into this place freely and worship you, learn more about your word, and learn more, quite frankly, about one of the most important jobs that we will ever have, and that is raising children. So would you give us open minds tonight? Would your spirit be so inclined to speak through Evan and Michelle, and that we would just be able to take something away that would cause us to be a more godly parent and raise our kids in a way that honors you, puts a smile on your face. We ask that in Jesus' name. Amen. I have been privileged to know the Gatewoods. Let's see. Mary-Kate is, what, 19?
Yeah.
19. So I got to coach Mary-Kate when she was 11. So simple math tells you I've known these guys for at least 8 years and have watched them parent a number of children that we will talk about. And partly because maybe I'm just a judgmental person, hopefully not just that, but I said when Alicia and I were up here, there weren't an awful lot of models out there where I, you know, we don't have family here, we don't have grandparents, aunts, uncles, and so there weren't a lot of people that I could look to and say, I really respect how they do things, I would like to do things very similar, and I think that's important for all of us. The Gatewoods happen to be one of those sets of parents. They've done an incredible job. Would you just tell us maybe a little bit about yourselves, maybe where you grew up, played football, those kinds of things, and then maybe a little bit about how you met.
I grew up in Dallas, Texas.
Are you on?
You told me to do that. I grew up in Dallas, Texas.
There it is.
My dad left our house when I was about in seventh grade, and so that was kind of a big impact on me. I did not grow up going to church, but I got involved in a ministry called Young Life when I was in high school, and it changed everything for me as I met Christ through that. And but as I got older and became married and had kids, I didn't have really a role model, so that's kind of part of the backdrop of my parenting background.
Yep. And a little known fact, what did you do in college?
Oh, I played football at OU. I was a linebacker. And somebody saw me on 30 on for 30.
Oh, Kevin.
Yeah. I'm famous for being Brian Bosworth's backup. And so I am on ESPN often on his 30 for 30.
Very good.
So, little known fact.
Mm-hmm. And he is not a cusser, and he cusses on that. So just so you
that
know.
That is bull.
National TV.
Is damn a cuss word?
Yes.
It's in the Bible.
It's biblical.
That's how you make lakes.
That's all anything our kids said was, he cussed. I'm like, you. Yeah. And all he said is, I don't look like that. I'm
like, yeah.
Tell us about you.
Okay. I grew up in Lubbock, Texas. I have an older sister, and he has an older brother. We both have one sibling, 5 years older. No cousins, no aunts and uncles. My parents were both only children. I wanted to see the world, so I came to OU because my parents told me that it was an Ivy League school. And so I believed them, and I came, and I wanted to live in the sorority houses too. So we were set up on a blind date. I thought it was a blind date. I thought we were set up on a blind date.
It was blind.
He had actually gone to the Cayo house and decided through the composite who he was going to take out.
I was shopping the composites.
What's a composite? Pictures?
It has a picture of every girl in the house.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Very good. Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know till I was married that he had seen the composite.
Wasn't quite so blind, huh?
Yeah. So, and then he told me he always thought he had blonde hair, and he really had dark black hair. So when he showed up to pick me up, I thought he was tricking me, and I wouldn't go. I was like, you're not him. So.
And now I'm getting less and less hair.
Yeah. Yes.
So I was a school teacher. I taught school for 2 years, and then I got pregnant with twins, and we decided, well, we got married first, but I decided
you're getting ahead of yourself.
I chose to stay home with my kids, and we knew we always wanted a big family, but after we had 4, we stopped, and then we changed our mind, and we had 5, and then we stopped, and we sold everything and changed our mind, and had 6, and then we stopped and we had seven.
And now then, we're stopped.
Yeah.
For sure.
Then the oldest are twins and they started driving and I knew we were done and we did something about it. So grandkids.
We're not going to talk about that.
Although we had two foster kids about 3 years ago, and that's a whole nother story. That if we make it to that, we'll go. So
I think the math was seven.
Yes.
Seven.
And a daughter-in-law now. So I have eight.
Eight.
I pay for eight.
run through the ages again. Twins, 25. Go
23, 21, 19, 15, and 7. So we had 5, 6, and under, and then 3 years the next one, and then 4 years the last one. So.
Okay.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, it changes.
Yes. So with having seven kids, do you ever lose one?
I didn't lose them. If they told me where they were, I knew where they were. It was when they told him where they were, lost them.
That's true. Because I would get distracted.
No, we would go to a restaurant.
This is my story.
Evan, could you share this, please?
We're at the Mexican restaurant, and, you know, honestly, there were several other families with us, and so there was a bunch of kids. And Ty,
He was three.
He comes up to me and tugs on me and says, I'm going to the bathroom. He goes to the bathroom. It's time to leave. Everybody's ready. We all get in cars and, hey, you got my kids? Yeah, you got my kids. And we get home and the phone rings.
Because you didn't have cell phones, you know.
And yeah, and it's like, have you left a child at the restaurant? Which, like, where's Ty?
No, and we didn't know because everybody hadn't gotten there yet.
Yeah,
and we were like, anyway. They were like, well, there's a little boy here named Ty. We were like,
So that was the first time we lost Ty. Does anybody know what a muster station is?
Mustard.
Mustard? Or is it muster? Cruise ships. Cruise ships. We're on a cruise.
It was his fault.
With his grandmother, with her grandmother. And, it's Ty again.
No, I told him he's going to go with you. So he goes to get back on the boat.
Why is it always my fault?
So no,
she's wondering.
Back, he's not with him. And we were in the Bahamas.
Okay.
Evan, could you finish?
Yeah, that was another time we lost Ty. I was thinking about the time when we left him in the room with your sleeping grandmother.
That was both their fault. Yeah.
And then over the announcement, could the parents of Tyler Gatewood come to the muster station? Come to the muster station. And our oldest son, Blake, is playing ping pong with the junior high kids, and he goes, oh my gosh, that's my brother. What's a muster station? And so, anyway.
He was sleeping with my grandmother in the room, and he woke up, and he went into the hall, and the door closed, but he only had a diaper on, so he was probably three again, standing in the hallway.
Locked out of his room.
The maid that didn't speak English took him to the muster station.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the scariest time was Meg. Has anybody been to an alligator farm?
Oh.
That's terrifying.
That was awful.
To not be able to find a kid and you're like, I'm at an alligator farm. Surely she's someplace. And those are big places. Anyway, she was safe in the...
But the worst one is Mary Kay. Because she still's mad at us about it.
Yeah, she is.
And she was probably 11, and we were in Florida, and she liked snow globes. So she had gotten a snow globe every place we went. We were staying in a house. She was on the third floor. And we said, we're going to go eat. So we all get in the car, and we go eat. And the kids kept going, Mary Kate's not in the car. We're like, ah, y'all are so funny. We drive into Seaside in all that traffic, and we go, where's Mary Kate? We told you she wasn't in the car. So by the time we got back, the phone wasn't working in the house. She was traumatized.
She was traumatized.
Still mad at us about the snow globes. Because she was packing her snow globes. We were going to leave the next day, and she was wrapping them all up in her clothes, and she didn't hear that we were leaving. So.
But she wasn't really lost, though. She was at a house.
Yeah.
So that didn't really count. She was afraid, but we were not. So.
Yeah. Are you feeling better about yourself now?
Yeah.
All right. We have talked about the last 3 weeks, maybe starting with the end in mind. There's got to be some kind of vision for your family, vision for your kids. Very rarely do you just kind of accidentally stumble into having great kids. OK, okay? Knowing that we have lots of little accidents on the way, and like, wow, that worked. But what does the end in mind, or what did the end in mind look like for you two?
We had both come from, like, either small families or just kind of a place where, for me, I needed a family. I wanted to have that. I remember hanging out with friends who had families, and so I would be at their house all the time. And I think Michelle, the same, is that we were drawn to just being a part of something and being and having that belonging. And so, I mean, even when we got married, our kind of our song was, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And our dream was, gosh, we want that for us, and we want that for our kids.
Yeah, to have a community, I think, and we wanted to do it different than our families, which, as I became a parent, I also discovered that I was pretty hard on my parents, and they did a lot right, and I think you don't figure that out till you're 30 or 35, that maybe they did do something right. So, but I did want to do it different than them, and I wanted a different marriage than they had for sure. So I think that was always a main focus, was our marriage. But I didn't realize it was hard, you know, that you don't, just because you follow all the rules and do everything right doesn't mean that you get along every day, or you are a good dad, or you are a good mom, or, you know, you've got to work through it and communicate. And
yeah, I think when you're young, you're naive in that you think you just follow the rules. A plus B always equals C. And you just do that. And then as life slaps you around a little bit, you kind of go, you give yourself some grace and give your kids some grace and do whatever it takes to survive.
Yeah.
So safe to say that the end in mind would be that you would have children that would serve the Lord based on the verse that kind of became your mantra?
Yeah. I think we wanted a family that loved each other and lived in community together and supported each other, you know, wanted to be together, where we would have said we didn't want to be with our siblings. We do spend time with his brother now. My sister is, believe it or not, has 7 cats and lives and is not married and lives in San Antonio. So we live very different lives. I mean,
cats,
you know.
Cats and kids.
Yeah. So we're just different. Yeah.
Okay, so you did create that culture, because again, I've got to be a part, you know, around your family for the last 8 years, and looking from the outside in, I know it's probably never exactly like it is to the outsiders, but your kids want to be with each other, and they enjoy being at your house. Certainly during the growing up years, Mary Kate, your house was kind of the house. How did you create that culture that they'd want to be together, want to be with each other? What were some things you did?
Well, first of all, it's always a facade, you know, to some degree. I mean, it's the Facebook thing. Everything looks perfect on the outside, but, and we're just like any family. I mean, they fought a lot when they were little.
I think one thing Michelle did is, and you, if anybody knows her, she likes to throw a party. And so any birthday, hey, it's May the 4th? May the 4th, and then we got Star Wars stuff all over our house.
May the 4th be with you.
So anything that could be a holiday, anything that could be a celebration, it was a celebration. And so there was kind of that atmosphere that she kind of drew us to. And if somebody had a soccer game, most of the time everybody got drugged to the soccer game and that kind of thing. So,
but that's a lot of lost stories, too. Somebody's always lost at that. Yeah. And they didn't play soccer. I don't know why he's saying that. But they played football and
baseball. And
yeah.
Anyway.
Baseball. Yeah. Volleyball.
Yeah. They charge you to get into the volleyball games, though, so we didn't.
Didn't
take them all the time.
We never played close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were some other things? What were some other things that you, so yes, you threw a lot of celebrations. You went from May the 4th be with you to Cinco de Mayo. But
yeah, I think we were pretty structured, too. You know, there's so many books, and you want to be a good parent, and you read everything on the market. And back when we were raising our kids, it was Growing Kids God's Way. And that means they can't sleep in your bed, and they, you know, you have to have a pillow under your bed, and they get on the floor. And then a few years later, it was family bed, and they all just got in our bed. So, you know, we took things from each book, and I think that there were valuable things, but we had to fit it to our family. I finally figured out that if everybody at least slept, we all got along a little bit better. Rest is, bedtime was real important, structure with bedtime. The book I'm reading right now talks about worship and rest, and we were very consistent in church. They were in Sunday school whenever we were home, which we didn't travel a lot or do a lot of things. We were home. People don't invite people with seven kids to their house. I mean, you know, it'd be like everything was off limits when you got there, if you know. So we were home a lot, and we were at church a lot on Sundays, and then Evan would always sign us up on Wednesdays, and then I was somehow the one always in charge. So we did.
I volunteered you.
He volunteered me a lot. So I think I was surprised with my older kids. They did Awana's in a thing, and several years later, they were singing the verses, and I was like, where'd you learn that? Because I felt like I hadn't taught it to them. I mean, I hadn't, but they'd learned it at Sunday school. So I just think God is faithful.
Yeah, we do have a lot of fond memories. We went to our Lord's Community Church when they were young and were involved in Sunday schools, and the kids were always there, and we were always there with doing all the activities. And then we show up here and get that same sense of, wow, all these kids are going to grow up together, and they will have those memories of that community that mm-hmm. we grew up with. Because
yeah.
we still see people from that church, and those are sweet relationships that never go away. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think we value, as a family, but we also value other people. And that was Growing Kids God's Way is where I would point that back to, was just respecting others and valuing people more than the soccer team you're on or the being on time. I mean, that you know your friend needs help, and you are there. You know what I mean? You value the relationship more than you value maybe what your calendar says. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you talked about that the other day when we had lunch, is you wanted your kids to be a blessing to other people, right?
Yeah.
And do you want to expand on that?
Well, I mean, it was kind of it's always the theme, love God and love others, and it was had to be less about rules and more about authenticity, I think. I had a conversation with Ty about it. It's like, was I a good parent? Am I okay? And that's kind of what we talked about, is that manners, rules, there's a heart behind all of those. Don't jump on people's furniture. I mean, it's like it seems like a don't do that. But there's a heart behind it that says, wow, this is somebody we care about. We're not going to jump on their furniture, are we? And so you can kind of, you pour that into them as you're instructing them on rules. And that's the only way it made sense to me. And so hopefully it made sense to them, instead of just always, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that.
And we weren't really very good at it either. We tried to do the family time things. And man, our kids will tell you a story about Evan throwing things, and
no, now you're telling the story.
I didn't say what you threw.
Okay. No, but we did. You read all those books, and you think, all I have to do is follow the books. Yeah. And so, man, you have the family time, you sit around, and guys, I'm going to read this devotional, and we're all going to kumbaya together, and then he touched me, she touched me. The next thing I know, I'm throwing a log across the backyard. But what a memory my kids have, because they remind me constantly. Mm-hmm. So you try to have these super spiritual times with your kids and force it on, like, we're going to do this because it's going to make us godly. And it's just, it's like.
And then 25 years later, when he's mad, they'll go, are you going to throw a log?
What are you going to do, Dad, throw a log? Shut up.
So have you had those spiritual moments that maybe showed up that maybe weren't quite as forced?
Yes. And a lot of that comes when something bad happens, when there's discipline involved, and you get those sweet moments where they repent and their spirit breaks, and you think, oh my gosh, look what happened.
Well, and I think as they get older too, you see them in action, and you they put their faith to the test a little bit, and God is faithful. He shows up, you know, or you get a phone call from, you know, a parent that your kid has been the one that their kid's been being bullied, and your kid's the one that helps him pick his books up, or your kid, you know, you just find out that, that they have kindness towards others, and so you see that it's that yeah. they understood it.
And I'll just tell you, I don't remember teaching all that, you know? And so it has to be just part of who each of you are, mm-hmm. that you're being authentic. This is the way we live because this is who God wants us to be. Mm-hmm. And your kids just naturally do it because that's the culture they grew up in. Yeah. I don't remember saying, okay, this is how you be kind. When you see the bully, you help. Okay. Yeah. I didn't do any of that. Yeah. I was just trying to survive.
All right, back to surviving with seven different, I would guess, unique children, all having their own personalities, interests. Where did you find yourself parenting them different, or did you? And then were there some things that were, this is a constant through all of them?
I would say we probably parent all seven differently. We tried, you know, on 3 and 4 to do them like 1 and 2, and it didn't work. 3 and 4 are really different personalities than 1 and 2. They are type A driven. They follow the rules or sneak, and you don't know they're not following the rules. But 3 and 4, you got to kind of motivate and, you know.
They're more artsy.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. They're going to do it their own way for sure, and they hear a different song.
Yeah.
And then the little ones, see, and that makes me forget Mary Kate, who says she's the middle child, and she's not. She's the next one under, and she always feels forgotten. So you have to, I did everything for her. I would be the kindergarten helper. I would be the everything for her. And Mary Kate is always like, my mom never came to my school. You know, I'm like, I was there all the time. And then the two little ones, I've kind of, I had 5 other big ones that did my job for me, and then I would have to say, back off, it's my kid, not yours, yeah. You know?
I was telling Greg when we went to lunch that what Michelle does is, because I'm a guy, I don't recognize things very well, but she sees their traits much clearer than I do, and then she speaks it to them. Emma, you are so loving. I can't believe you're so full of love. Mm-hmm. Meg, man, everybody likes you, Meg. You're this. And so she finds the traits, the qualities that that are godly, and she just speaks it to them again. And I think, and then kids hear us talk about them to other parents too. I mean, if they hear you talk to somebody else about it, even better.
That's growing kids got to me.
Oh.
That was, you're supposed to, you're supposed to be on the phone. Like back then we had a phone with a cord, and you'd be on the phone where they could hear you in the kitchen, and you'd have to compliment your kids so they could overhear you. And that works. I mean, that does work.
It does work.
And it works with your husband, too.
It does.
Boys and girls, obviously you had plenty of both. Did you, what were some of the differences there? Did you parent, did you find yourself gender specific, parenting a certain way?
Well, boys are always moving, and girls are always talking. So the boys, you kind of had to make sure they were where they said they were going to be. And the girls, you had to parent more about being kindness and not, yeah, I mean, especially middle school, you know. But they all go through their seasons where developmentally they have a difficult stage, I would say. I came home one day in 6th grade, the twins had started, and of course they're my firstborn, they did nothing wrong. And I come home from school, and he was, Blake, just immediately goes to his room. And the phone rings, and it's Evan. And I answer it, and he's like, what happened? And I said, what do you mean, what happened? He said, well, Blake's hiding under his bed with a knife because he thinks you're gonna kill him. So, I mean, it was total kind of PMS for boys. I mean, it was like, what is wrong with him? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, he just came home crazy that day.
He did.
And he will say he had a real emotional year that year, and he doesn't know why. But, you know, I took him to the doctor because I thought he had mono. And he gets...
Just PMS.
Well, actually...
I'm sorry.
I realized, yeah, it was. Because he said, well, you know, we did every test in the world. And he said, but, you know, he's grown 6 inches in 2 months. I was like, I thought his pants were just capris, you know? I mean, I really... It'd been summer. He hadn't tried on his jeans, you know? So...
He was traumatized for wearing those capris to school.
So, I don't know. I think that...
Yeah, I can't think of anything. I mean, obviously, they're different genders, and girls are different than boys, but I didn't think we used any different techniques on them or anything.
Okay.
Just go ahead.
Question from the audience member. How did you? And by the way, you can keep sending text, and I'll try to keep on track. How did you connect with each of your kids and make sure they had enough love and attention?
We were really hard on ourselves with that because if he took every girl on a date, then guess who got gypped? I mean, or if I went with the boys, I mean, there really wasn't enough time in the day to do that, especially if you do the once a week ones. Or we were pretty hard on ourselves like that. And so that's probably why we had family things, because we did a lot together as a family. We would try to carve out times and use discernment and just recognize when they needed one-on-one.
Yeah, when somebody needed it, yeah.
And I think at times they probably felt a little bit, not neglected, but like, Blake would just pace around our kitchen and say, "You never have time to talk to me." You know, it's like, but he wouldn't say that now. I mean, so I don't know. I think that it's probably with your kids never enough, but you just do the best you can.
And I remember just having that third one and having the sense of, how are we going to love this one enough that the love is somehow going to be, we only have this much, and we have to divide it now between three instead of two. And you've all experienced it. It's not a splitting. It's an exponent. It's actually an exponent. It
multiplies.
It multiplies and it just envelops everything. It makes it bigger.
I really worried about that with Meg, with the third one, because, man, I loved those twins, and they could do nothing wrong. And then the second I held Meg in my arms, I got it. It was just like, oh, my gosh, don't touch my baby, you know. So it just grows. So I think you just try to love them right where they are, you know, and we weren't always good at it. I'm sure we failed lots of times, but we always tried. And I think, too, the daily, just that praying without ceasing, that you are, I think God tells you sometimes that, you know, go check on that one or go whatever, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How in the world did you find time to do that, especially you, you were at home with them after the twins, right? So how did you find time to pray, be in the Word, and to even recognize and hear the Holy Spirit?
I had to figure out how to do it in the midst of everything I was doing. I mean, and so while I folded the laundry, I prayed for kids, and I have some papers I'm going to give you that was my list that I had on the laundry room door, and I would pray those things while I folded clothes, because instead of being mad that I was folding clothes, I wanted to be thankful that I had kids that got them dirty and that they were healthy and they were, and you know, and I could pray for one of the big ones. For the older two, was when they were guilty, they'd get caught. And Blake will say, every time he was in trouble for something, he always got caught. And his friends never got caught, but he always got caught. A pastor at our church, the wife had, they had 10 kids, didn't they?
I don't know.
They had a lot of kids. They had all girls and one boy, and they were told, God told them to have kids till they had a boy, and the last one's a boy. So she would always talk about each kid would chip you and make you more into what God wants you to be. So the more kids you have, the more work you need. So we need.
There you go.
But she would also keep Joy dishwashing soap under the counter. And the verses about Joy, I would try to memorize. And when they spilled their juice the 20th time or there was just a huge mess to clean, I would say, get the Joy out from under the counter. And it would remind me to be thankful. You know, there's a lot of people that would like to be in the shoes of having babies and being able to stay home with their kids and, you know, feed them, you know.
Okay, so now let's take that to yourselves, right? So you had to find time to maybe discern when one needed a little more attention. How did you find time for yourselves?
We had a date night every Thursday
at
7 o'clock.
You lie.
We did try to do date nights, but it wasn't every week. And we would... a lot of times it was always a disaster, but we got babysitters regularly.
Yeah, we spent the money for babysitters. We made a commitment that we're not going to survive unless we take care of us. And we made sure our kids knew that, you know, of course, some of that was going Kids God's way.
Yeah, and when you're structured in your routine of the day, your kids go to bed at 8 o'clock. So we really, when our kids were little, everybody was in bed at 8 o'clock. As they got older, it changed, and And it was harder when they were in middle school and high school to have date nights than it was when they were little. The easiest time was while they were little.
Yeah. But we did make it a priority in the sense, not necessarily a date night, but that our kids knew that they were not more important than us, that this makes things go, and they are going to have to wait in line. And I think that was important, and I don't think it scarred anybody. But, you know, you hear the child-centered home. No, you can't do it. There's too many of you. You know, we'd all die trying to take care of all your needs.
But that also means that you have to be in agreement with each other on, you may not agree with the way that he's screaming at your kid and going to explode and throw a log. You may not like that. So you can't tell him in front of the kids. You can't start screaming too and throw your hissy fit. And although I think I've thrown a cup of water on you before, haven't I?
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Cool.
He needed to be cooled off, I guess. I needed to be cooled off.
Or tell me that I'm ridiculous. Yeah. Why are you in an argument with a three-year-old? Because they won't do what I told them to do.
But
you did tell me that maybe not when they were three, but you didn't do that in front of your kids,
No. Which
I think is incredibly damaging.
And so you take it out of the room. I mean, or you have at a different time, you've got a signal where you're like,
you get the look.
My wife's got a signal.
Yeah, we have a lot of signals, and he kicks me a lot because I talk too much, so you may see me with a bruised leg. But we did have eye contact a lot to shut each other up, probably.
Yeah. In the discipline area.
Yeah.
Okay, so Blake now is married. Mm-hmm. Who knows, maybe close to having kids. So maybe you can think about the people sitting out here. You can think about your own kid, Blake. If you were wanting to pass on a nugget or two of parenting that you would just say, I don't want to forget to pass this on to Blake, what would some of those key nuggets be as it relates to parenting?
I think what I think of right now is just being authentic with your kids. And part of that is kind of being humble and going, and at some point, I don't have it all together. Having the ability to apologize, even to a small child, and getting down on there and say, man, I was out of line. I'm so sorry. And making your faith real that way. When you're interacting with people, take the opportunities to, if somebody does something nice, wow, did you see that person do that for that other person? I mean, just as you go along, be authentic and talk about your faith. Talk about why you're doing things, why you do what you do, what motivates you. And I think, and then that connects them to the God who created them. Otherwise, they're just like, they don't get it. So I don't know if I said that.
I would say focusing on your relationship with God and making sure that you're just the daily bread, the manna every day, because that's where you hear the areas that, you know, you need to pursue, or maybe the things you need to step back in, or, so I would say, and I think church attendance is huge. I think structure, kids need boundaries. They want you to be their friend. They need you to be their parent. I think I'm just reaching my oldest ones, becoming their friend, my ones that are out of college and working. I mean, and I kind of draw the line. It's probably different with everyone, but as long as they're, you know, while I'm paying the bills, I think I have a lot more I have more say in what they do. You know, although I've got a married one, and I got on to him this weekend for kicking the 15-year-old. I mean, you know, they still fight. I mean, you know, so. But I do think that kids need boundaries. And when they know what the boundaries are, then everybody, you don't have to get on to them as much. I mean, if you let them stay up till midnight every night and they're having a big fit on the floor, they can't get in trouble for that because you're the one that didn't put them to bed. You know what I mean? I'm the one that didn't do my job. They're tired. They should have been put to bed, you know? Or if they're fighting with their friends, you teach them when they're little that you share toys. If you can't share the toy, you don't get the toy. I mean, you don't just go buy two. I mean, you teach those things at a young age. And I've always, when I've studied it and learned it, if you parent them and really are on top of it until they're seven, it gets a whole lot easier after they're seven because they've kind of set some habits and they, you know, it's like brushing your teeth. And we're not good about that. Emma still doesn't brush her teeth. So
do not say anything to her about her after at church. After church. You mentioned consistency a little while ago. Do you want to, as being one of the keys?
Consistency with what?
Just as one of the most important things that you would pass on.
Oh, yeah. Consistency as a parent, too. I mean, you can't, you've got to, and as a young mom, I would say my yes had to be yes and my no was no. And so if that they ask me over and over, you can't change your mind halfway through because you're tired. I mean, if you're telling your kid, don't go play with the sticks, but you're busy in your conversation, don't play the sticks. Don't play with the sticks. Oh, well, you know, you've got to be consistent in your parenting. If your words have to have value or none of your words have value. So I don't know. I mean, I think that, and it's hard and you're tired and that's why rest matters. And we did do the family bed by the end of it. I mean, we went one extreme to the other and our kids were healthy and happy when they were rested. So sleep was a huge thing, you know.
Yeah, sounds like consistency, structure, really mm-hmm. important for your family. Evan, you talked about it early on. Dad left at around 10, didn't grow up in a Christian home. How did you figure this out? So I feel like I don't know where in the heck I would be if my dad was, I think, fantastic. He made a few mistakes along the way, but, you know, he was a fantastic dad. I got to watch that. How did you figure out how to be a godly parent without seeing it in your own home?
I hung out with other families. I remember being at church and watching other parents and watching other fathers. And I remember specifically making a decision when the twins were born that I wanted to be I wrote a paper for church on Father's Day. I still remember it. Being an ambitious father, that I could have a bigger impact on the world by being an ambitious father and pouring into those kids than I would chasing a career. And so that was my mindset, that I want to be good at this. I don't know how to be good at this, but I want to be good at this. And anytime you pay attention to something, it'll work out. So
I didn't ask you this one at lunch, so this is just off the cuff, and you can pass or you can answer. We clearly have an enemy. We talked a little bit about that on Sunday. We got an enemy who wants to get in our business and wreak havoc, right? So enemy's primary place to do that, I think, for the Christian couple would be between the two of you, and then also in raising children. So if you were to think about how, in your opinion only, how does the enemy most try to wreak havoc on young parents?
I think one of the things that I've seen, and it's kind of a seed that's planted that grows later, is if a dad is not completely and totally engaged, the wife will get her self-esteem, her value from her children. And she will pour herself into the children, and the kids become everything. And the relationship in the marriage dissolves, and they disengage. And I think part of that is it's the husband's responsibility to stay in there, pay attention. What's going on? Pay attention to your wife. Yes, there's a lot of things going on, but pay attention to her. I'm not very good at it, but I try really hard. But I've seen it happen. We've seen it happen where the wife, that's all she has. And as a result, the husband's like, well, she cares about that more than she cares about me. And it feeds on itself, and they're no longer married.
Yeah, one of the things you said the other day at lunch that I thought was so good was one of the key reasons you put this relationship first, not only biblical, but you knew that all those kids were going to leave you someday.
Yeah. That's what I say all the time. It's like, Michelle, it's only going to be me and you. They don't care about us. You all need to realize they don't care about you. As soon as they graduate, boom, they're gone. So
but this will be there forever.
But this will be here forever.
Michelle, do you have any thoughts on that question?
Well, and I think when there's unity in the marriage, that a lot of the other things in the household fall into place, because you're setting an example on how to communicate in positive ways, how to fight fair, how to love one another, and how to show value. And he is really good at honoring me and showing, I mean, and if the kids try to, you know, say, Mom, whatever, I'm mad at the kids, he always takes my side. Even if he doesn't agree, he might take me to the bedroom and tell me something else. But I think for women, comparison is pretty, especially in today's world with social media, I think it looks like everybody else has it easier. They drive a better car, they have better clothes, their kids have this or that, or they go on vacations, or... And don't compare yourself to other people. You are unique and perfect in how he made you. And he created you with a purpose and to be a blessing and a beautiful to encourage others. I mean, and through the things that you do in your daily life, you don't have to be, he just doesn't think that someone who works in an urban ministry and rides a bike every day is more spiritual than someone that drives a minivan and is home with their kids. He has purpose in each one of our lives. And it's a picture that all together makes one body. And us raising our children to be godly people who can go out and be Christian people to their friends, or notice that someone in their class needs shoes, or... the smile to another adult that they just needed a hug from a child that day. I mean, you just don't know where he's using that. And as you pursue that and let God work through you, then he does send you glimmers of things. Years later, somebody will come and go, you'll never know, but this happened and because of that. And you're like, I was like, had snot all over me and baby spit up and, you know, hadn't washed my hair in 2 weeks, you know. So I just think, let him use you right where you are.
Good. How did you as a mom keep from, you know, I think it happens with just one or two kids that you can start to feel isolated and alone. I can imagine with seven that feeling had to have crept up on you from time to time. How did you deal with that? How did you get over that? How did you push through it?
I'm pretty intentional with my friends in that, and I was... I did weekly Bible studies. Like, I did BSF for a long time, but then Ty got kicked out of BSF. He was always kicked out of the nursery at church. He was always, you know, and I always said, he's the one that will be the strongest leader. I mean, these things that you're kicking him out as the three-year-old are going to be his greatest assets. And he's the one that the mom called because the bully was picking on the kid, and he's the one that stood up for the bully. So Bible study was always pretty important to me, but as I got where I couldn't, I had Emma, and at that point at BSF, you couldn't bring a baby. So I decided to start having Jet. And I started having a Bible study in my house, and I had six friends that would come. And so the first year we had six friends, and maybe we made it to eight. But then there was a season where like 50 or 60 came. We've been doing it 25 years, and now it's down to about maybe 20 or 25. I bet 40 would say they're part of it, but only 20 come. So... Mm-hmm. Well, do we take a break in the summer? And, you know, but we have diligently, one of the six went out, and she was not a believer when she started, and now she is John Rossi's wife, Faith. I mean, that whole family exploded with their faith, and she has a whole ministry now where she leads a Bible study. And, you know, and where God used that with me was I would be at the kids' conferences, which I didn't go to a lot of those because I don't know why, but... if I was at one, there was always a new mom there, and next thing you know, she came to my Bible study, and you just saw people grow in their faith, and I don't know. I mean, so that's where my friendship things really come about. I don't know. I like to celebrate things, so I invite people over. I felt like, too, as we feel very blessed where we are and the things that the Lord's given us. And so we try to have an open door at our house. We have lots of groups through our house. We've had lots of college ministries, which you find as you're having college ministries in your home, they help you with your seven kids. And, you know, they may see them out, and they are accountable to those kids. And you just see that. The same with you guys. Like, as we first started coming to church here, then y'all met our kids, and they stole y'all from us. So it was like, wait, they're our friend, and they're, you know, not really, but, you know. You just kind of see how the Lord uses those relationships that as you pour into somebody and then they get to know your kids, and that's kind of a trickle.
One of the things that I've loved to hear is how it started with, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that's what you got. That was your focus right after marriage, and now you have, I mean, your Bible studies in your home, you have kids in your homes, you had life groups in your home, that your house actually served the Lord. Not just you, but your kids are joining that effort as well.
Never thought about that.
Start with the end in mind. I have a few more just planned ones. I haven't got an awful lot of text. I think I've asked the ones that have been asked, so we can push pause for a second. Anybody want to raise your hand and ask a question? Annie.
Yeah, how did you do that?
Yeah. Say that last part again, especially siblings.
You know, they all fought a lot, especially with the five that were six and under. They fought a lot. And then as they got older, you could kind of manage it a little bit better. Yours are all still so little. You're in the fighting stage. And you kind of think you're never going to see clear of that. But then it kind of gets crazy because as they get older and you can parent that, then the older ones are who picks on the ones 15 years younger than them. So it makes no sense. But you deal with it as it happens. And, you know, I know when they were little, if one of them bit the other one, I bit the other one right back, which I know you're not supposed to do that, but I did do it. And they never bit again. I mean, you know, so, and two, if I didn't, I would try to get to the bottom of it to some degree. One was a huge liar, but he couldn't lie if he looked at my eyes. And so I would make him look at my eyes, and if his eyes shifted, I knew he was lying. So then I'd have to listen to the other one's story. You just had to, when you get the, you get a discernment with it when you're dealing with it every day, and you have to deal with it. You're the parent, you know, you have to parent it. And so if you can't figure out the who did it, then everybody gets in trouble, you know?
Everybody should get in trouble anyway. That solves everything.
And the other thing, if you don't say the punishment if you're not going to do the punishment. Yeah. You've got to be consistent with what you say. I know you're not supposed to spank, but I did. And I would carry a spoon with me, and I didn't spank when I was mad, and they'd always call it a pop, and they would say, "Mom's going to pop us," you know, and I'd just get out the wooden spoon and just hold it up. Another thing, and as they get older, like now I would say I would never spank over 5 to 7. I probably would never
spank. 5 to 7 times?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
7 years old. But it would be, I don't know what I'll do when it's grandkids because I don't get to do that. But if it's about safety, I would probably say still spank your kid. I don't know. But I did also, we didn't have a lot of rules, but when we were in the car going places, I would prepare my kids where we were going to be. We're going to church. Church is where you don't run. Church is where you stand by mommy and you don't, you know, if I'm talking to my friend and you really need to tell me something, you put your hand on my lap and I'm going to put my hand on top of yours. And that means I know you're trying to talk to me. I know you need me. If you need me and it's an emergency, squeeze my hand. But if you just need to tell me something, as soon as I can, I will talk to you. So when you put your hand on top of theirs, they know that you're, they know that you know, and it really resolves itself, you know. And if they give you the squeeze and then it's some stupid thing, you say, "I'm not going to answer you next time because you're getting me and nobody's bleeding," you know.
Yeah.
So I think preparing them and giving them is helpful.
I can project.
Go ahead, go ahead.
I did tell them that a lot. I would say, "You know what? When you're old, this is all you've got." And then they go, "Well, you don't even like your sister." I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "I like her. We're just really different."
But we did. I mean, you know, they would, if they would like choose a friend over a sibling or whatever, you made sure that they knew. You understand that these people that are around this table, these are all you'll ever have for the rest of your life. They will stand by you. And so you kind of, it's like a rallying cry. We are the Gatewoods, and we stand by each other. And I think that's what you teach your girls.
And we included friends in a lot of things. Like, whoever's best friend is also ends up being the other kid's best friend. They will fight for each other. They will, you know, Meg's best friend, she has three best friends, and those three will, Mandy Blanks, who comes to church here, is one of them. And there's just a real family. They feel part of our family. Sarah, another one, she had nobody to move her out of college, so who moves her but my boys? So they step in and help each other. And Blake had a friend live with us for a season in high school at his of their senior year, and we saw him at church. He's trying to work at Life Church right now and has had a lot of family trouble, but the things he said to us at church on, we went to At the Movies last week, and he just, the thing he remembers about our family is that we had college kids in our house, and he was not, he and Blake were neither one making good decisions. They graduated from high school, or I thought they did, and Blake had to go back for 6 weeks to work in the wood tech shop because he hadn't been going since March. And then Dakota was just hiding in the upstairs attic, the attic.
Bring it back in.
And I get the call that the two boys hadn't gone to school since spring break.
But what he remembers is those college kids being in our house all the time.
And now he wants to work at a church, and so who knows?
So if you have kids hiding in your attic, good things can
They're smoking in the attic is what they're doing. They're smoking.
I found cigarettes up there when I was getting the Christmas decorations out, and I was like, hey, what construction man's been up here? And Blake was like, oh.
That one guy. You remember that one guy? Yeah, it had to been him.
And he's like, it wasn't me. It was Dakota.
Other questions?
I can answer that because I was a football player, and so Blake got all the football in me that I pushed on him. It's like, but he liked it. Ty was like, Dad, I'm doing this for you. And I was like, well, come on, you're going to enjoy this. And then with Jet, I'm just like, Jet, you do whatever you want to do. So part of it was me growing as a and kind of valuing the right things and being able to see my kids better. Like, wow, he's really good at this. He doesn't have to do this, even though it was a joy for me. It's not a, definitely not a joy for him. So why do I want that so much for him? So kind of changing your dreams for your kids so that you're dreaming with them instead of
making them have your dreams.
You're right.
We have one of our kids has dyslexia, and school's hard. As a second grader, as a kindergartner, I knew something wasn't right. He could never figure out SpongeBob was yellow. I'm like, and so I thought he was colorblind. But by second grade, I knew we needed to do something different. So we did, and then he went to a private school, and then we were transferring back to public school. And I knew it was a hard situation for him, but he could rise to the table. I mean, but as a mom, when the teachers would call me because of whatever reason, he would I would support the teacher, but defend him to the teacher. You know what I mean? But totally, he never knew I was defending him. Right. So I would encourage him and have high expectations for him and expect him to rise to the mark. With each kid, you've got to figure that out. Because some kids, you know they're not trying their hardest, and others, he may make a C, and that's his best. The older ones, if they made B's at what really wasn't good enough for them, and I wasn't really smart enough back then to know I should have pushed them a little more. But I don't know. I think with each kid, you've just got to know that personality and know, recognize before you break their spirit, because you don't want to break their spirit. And also, we are really good about criticizing instead of affirming. And I would try to be, if I criticized, I would try to have at least 5 things of affirmation, because then you really only get to 2 or 3, you know? One other thing that we did that they love and still talk about every Christmas, and I would never get it done, so it moved to Valentine's Day, but we would do the 10 things we love about them. And so it's in a little notebook, and they'll go through their things, and they're just funny things they did or reasons that, and that's where we probably saw a lot of the character values. Things that you could really look back over the year and say, I love you because, and whatever thing they did from that year, you know. And it also is, you know, your little memory book of funny things and, you know.
Yeah, they love that too. And it does help, because I was like, I don't remember last year. And so to sit down and go through and go, okay, let's get with Blake. And we would literally spend time going, okay, it's going to take us 2 hours to think of 10 things from last year.
But you just end up with 100.
Yeah.
I mean.
And then so year after year we did
but
that.
But sharing that with him, because we're really good about telling him no. I want to tell him yes more than I tell him no. And there's so many things to tell him yes to, you know.
Todd sent a little thing that he wanted me to share, and that was when you define basically being a parent as work that you've been called to do, you have a tendency to see yourself as an owner parent. Owner parents think their job is to turn their children into something. They have a vision of what they want their children to be, and they think it is their job as parents to use their authority, time, money, energy to form their children into what they've conceived in their minds. The owner parents tend to think that they have the power and personal resources to mold their children into children they envision. That's a very dangerous part to play. So I don't know what the, oh yeah, it does say. Ambassador parents are different than owner parents. They really understand that they are never more than anything other than representatives of someone greater, God, wiser, more powerful, and more gracious, that they know that their daily work is not to turn their children into anything. They have come to understand that they have no power whatsoever to change their children, and without God's wisdom, they wouldn't even know what is best for their children. There's probably some place in between those two, but I thought the analogy of an owner parent and an ambassador was a good one to pass on. Maybe two more questions. Yep. Never teach a three-year-old how to be a three-year-old. Just let him be a three-year-old.
I think, too, finding the things they're good at, you know, giving them a chance to not be compared to their older brother or younger sister or whatever. You find what they excel at, and you verbal, a lot of verbal things with that, because we all, we're good about the negative verbal, but we're really slow with the positive. So I envision my kids, when you talked about, like, I think I'm holding them in my hand, and man, I gotta hold them tight. But then when you realize you've gotta open your hand and let the Lord, I mean, especially when they started riding bikes, I thought, oh my gosh, they're gonna drive in front of a car, and they're gonna, you know, and I just had to go, Lord, they're yours, they're not mine. I'm just given this short time on earth to parent them and try to steer them towards you, you know?
Jonathan, you think that's a good place to land the plane? You okay? I assume you can hang out for 5 or 10 minutes if people want to come up and ask questions. Can
we're
we show
run
some?
Run and hide, because I hate talking in front of a group. Oh, I get going and I talk.
You did great.
And then I'm like sweaty.
She
and
hates talking.
I talk too much.
She did great. Can you show some appreciation? Thank you.